Buenos días, ¿cómo están? ¿Bien? Qué bueno, qué bueno. I'm so excited to preach. It has been a while. I preached the first week in January, and I haven't preached since until now, so I'm very, very excited. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Michelle Casas. I go by Misha, and I am the director of outreach and pastoral care here at Westside. And, got COVID in November and things have just not been the same since then. Just those two couple of stairs totally do it for me. As you may know, we're in the middle of a sermon series on social justice, and this is a topic that I'm very passionate about. This is the reason why I moved to the U.S. to pursue a master's degree in social justice and missions at Denver Seminary. And it's something that it's really in my heart. I know it's really in God's heart, and I know it's in God's people's heart as well. So we're going to speak about that today. Last week, Patty Pell, our guest speaker, kind of introduced us. He gave us like the big picture, you know. She called it the big picture of the puzzle, putting the pieces together. And today we're going to talk about something a little bit more specific. We're going to continue talking about social justice the following weeks. But today I want to focus on a very interesting topic. So I'm going to talk to you about a race, okay? I'm going to talk to you about a race that is an invisible race. This race, I want you to know that you are running right now, and that you have been running since before you were even born, and that there's some stuff in this race that you can do where you can be very well equipped, like to run it well, like training and wanting to run and pursuing the goal, like the finishing line in the race. And there's stuff that you cannot control at all. And there's things that have been put in you that you have no control, and that will determine whether you run the race well or not. And these things about this invisible race that we're all running have to do about stuff like the color of your skin, your parents' income, like those two things. Did any of us determine that, like what color of skin we wanted to be born in? By the way, I love that I'm brown, and I love, if you are Asian, I love that you're Asian. I love that you're white. I love that you're African American. I don't care what color of skin you have. I love it because God meant to create you in that skin of color. And if he decided that, then I know it's good. And then we're going to go through that everything that God created is good, okay? The way the things he created were good and are good, okay? So these things that determine the race, how well you run the race or not, are like things like the color of your skin, the income your parents had even before you were born. You were in your mom's womb and you didn't determine, I want to be one of the Kardashians' children, you know? You cannot determine that. There's other stuff like the gender you're born. None of us can determine before we're born if we want to be a girl or we want to be a boy, right? And even the location in this world where you were born, you were not able to control that. And that will dictate how well equipped you will be to run this race, okay? So to illustrate this better, I want to invite Dustin and Kevin on stage, and I'm gonna ask you guys to stand there. That's the starting line, and you guys are gonna run this race, okay? By the way, whoever wins this race gets a total of $5, okay? This is yours, so get ready. So I'm just gonna give a couple of rules before that. There you go, start training. I want you guys to run, and that is the ending line, the finishing line. I kind of just want you to start there, Dustin, or Dustino, how I call you. And then you can, a little bit farther, that would be good. Let's not push it too much. Like, over here is fine. There you go. Okay, so on your marks, who do you think it's going to win? On your marks, I kind of feel like you are getting ready, Dustin, so I'm just going to put you this.
Okay.
Let's see how you do with this. And let's see who wins. And I actually feel like I kind of just don't want you to look. So can you just blindfold you, please, for this race? Okay, and then I'm going to go really quick. There you go. I'm going to go for the instructions. Y en realidad quiero dar las instrucciones en español, porque me es más fácil, porque es mi idioma. Entonces, yo espero que ellos entiendan de que tienen que correr de la línea verde a la línea rosada y que lo van a hacer bien. ¿Entendiste, Kevin?
Sí, yo sí entendí.
¿Entendiste, Dustin?
¿Cómo?
No habla. Okay, on your marks, get set, go. Well, there you go. Yep, yep. Let's just say you did. Okay, very quick, very quick. Good race, by the way, and you made it to the end. So I don't know if you should really complain or not, because you are clearly, you made it to the end, you know. You wanted to win, okay. But, you know, not everyone can win a race, right? Okay, quick debrief of this race. Did both of them have the same opportunity to win it? Was Dustin allowed to participate in the race, though? Was this a fair race? Were Kevin's, Kevin says it was, okay. Was Kevin's chances of winning high or low? Were Dustin's chance of winning high or low? Could we have expected Dustin to win the race? Is it humanly impossible for Dustin to win the race? Probably not. You know, if he did like a somersault, I did gymnastics, so if you did, I know how you could have got there easier. That would have taken years of training, an extra human effort, but technically, you could have still won the race. By the way, Dustin trains twice a day. He's doing the 75 hard, so he's reading his Bible, he's training twice a day, he changed his dietary, what would you call that?
Habits.
So I'm pretty sure if Dustin got a real chance to win this race, he would have definitely smoked Kevin.
That's not true.
So let's give them a round of applause. You guys can come back to your seats. Many times the result of the race that we're running don't have anything to do with what we can control or not. I saw Dustin trying his best right there. By the way, Kevin, you won. Why did I do this? Because this is a picture of life. This is what life looks like. We are all running this invisible race. And there's stuff that we can do to try to win this race. And then there's stuff systematically, culturally, geographically that will not allow us to run this race well. Now, I want to make a clarification because I think this is very important. Unlike races, like when you're in the Olympics or when you're in a marathon, you have one winner and then second place, third place, and then no one else qualifies. The race of life, the race that God has put for us, and that is in the middle of the biblical narrative, it's not like that. This is not a race where someone, a group of people has to win and then a group of people has to lose. And then if we want to make the Dustins in the world win, then we have to make the Kevins in the world lose. It's not like that. The Bible teaches us about this race, about being a restorative race. How can we make everyone reach from point A to point B? We don't want anyone to be in the middle. We don't want anyone to have to be with that bondage of not being able to run well. So that is very, very, very important to clarify, because this is not about like, if I win, then you have to lose. Or if since you were ahead and we now want you to win, then you better get the same bondages and then now I am free to run. No, this is about how can we restore all things to the original picture. So how can we make everyone get to the ending point? The good thing is that the Bible does talk about it, does talk about this topic of inequity. And in the Bible narrative, you know, you see things, how were things in the beginning? How were things when God created them? You see this image of goodness, of, Patty was talking about it, about shalom. Everything was flourishing. Everything that Adam and Eve needed physically and spiritually, was right there in the garden for them. So there's this image of like the first day, you know, God separates light from darkness. What does he do? He calls it good. You know, the second day, he separates the water on sky and on earth. What does he call it? He calls it good. And he keeps going every single day into calling his creation something good. Okay? And we see this picture in the Garden of Eden of flourishing, of everything is equal, everything is balanced, everything is doing okay, everything is doing good, okay? And there's actually a term for that. And the word is shalom. Now, shalom is a Hebrew word that means more than peace. You know, there's this idiomatic meaning of shalom. You know, Jewish people still use that until today, like which means like, ¿cómo estás, basically? But it's kind of like, peace be with you. So it has more meaning than just that. You can say shalom to someone and you're in so much conflict. And you are calling it shalom, but shalom means more than that idiomatic sense. The actual definition is peace, harmony, wholeness, completeness, prosperity, welfare, and tranquility. And it can be used also idiomatically, meaning both hello and goodbye. But this is the initial state of how God created all things. I want to show you my scale. This is how God created all things. This is how what shalom looked like. It was this perfect balance where everything was flourishing, everything was okay. All needs physically and spiritually will be met. Doesn't that sound awesome? I kind of wish we had stayed that way. But unfortunately, we see later on with sin how that changes, and we're gonna head there really soon. But I want us to focus, like, when God creates human beings, he doesn't just call it good, but there's something specific that he gives them. We're gonna read Genesis 1:27. It says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So we can see humans are set apart. They have something particular that the rest of the creation doesn't have. And that is that they bear the image of God. That is something that makes it different. You know, that is the definition of God of good and evil. This has a word, this has specific words in Hebrew that means tov and ra. That is the words in Hebrew, which means good and evil from God's perspective. Why is he able to define those words well? Because he created things good. Because he created things good, he's able to define what is good, what is tov, and what is evil, what is ra. He's able to say that. Now, the identity that he gives us with the image of God, the way he created us with the image bearers that we are, it's the bedrock of the Bible's view of justice, where we're all equal, we're not all the same, but we're all equal under God's eyes, and we all bear his image. We all have this dignity, this fairness that he has given to us. Now, after sin, things change, drastically change. There's disorder, sin enters the world, and now what we do as humans is, how can I define what is good and what is evil? And unfortunately, as humans, what we do is, how can I get most benefit from that? And we cannot define what good and evil is because we did not create the world. That's not in us to define what that is. So what we do is that now we're constantly redefining what good and evil looks for my benefit and at the expense of others. So this starts happening. Now I want to be up here, no matter what that means for the person that is down here. Even though I'm not the one that created things good, I want to call good what is good for me, regardless of what that means for someone else. We see this in the Bible narrative happening ever since sin, in a personal level, in a family level, in a community level, in a nation level, and in the world. who can say that we have not seen this? That people are defining what is good for their benefit, regardless of what is happening to other people that also bear the image of God. Now, I want to give you a very quick glimpse of how things are going to end. We're in the middle of the race right now, but I want to show you what the finishing line is going to look like, because maybe that will encourage you to join God's work, and how can we all get to that finishing line. So we started with Eden. Sin happened. Now everything's like this. It's unbalanced. So what is it going to look like now? What is the ending point? What is the finishing line? Revelation 21:4 shows us a big picture of that. It's talking about the new Jerusalem. The new, when new heavens and new earth are happening. And God says this: He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old things have passed. Do you want to know how the race is going to end? It will end that way. It will end back to this way. Now, how do we get from this to that? That is what I want to talk about today in 20 minutes. So wish me luck. How do we go back to find that balance? How do we go back to that? Well, thank God. God put his eyes on us and he said, I don't want things to be unbalanced. I did not create them that well. I created them tough. I created them good. So he picks one man on earth, Abraham, to redeem all things through him in the future. And he says this. I'm going to read from Genesis 18:18. He says, Abraham will surely become a great and powerful nation, and through him all nations of the earth will be blessed. Now, usually we stay here and we say, yes, okay, yes, going to the missions, yes, blessing everyone. I am blessed because through Abraham, and then in the future. And then we forget the very, very next verse. We don't preach it as much. Verse 19 says, for I have chosen him, so that he will command his children and his household. In other versions, it says his generations forward. After him, to keep the way of the Lord by doing what? Righteousness and justice. This is the way he was to direct his generations forward, which his generations forward became Israel, who's supposed to be a witness, as we were singing about. Who's the witness? Israel was supposed to be the witness of the nations for all of us to be blessed by Jesus Christ. So this is the way, this is the specific task that God gives to Abraham, to run his, to fear the Lord and run his next generations with justice and righteousness. Now, what does doing righteousness mean? Sometimes when we talk about being a righteous person, we think about something that's doing good things, you know. But the Bible goes a little bit forward. The word righteousness actually comes from the Hebrew word called tzedekah. And tzedekah means more than just doing the right thing. Tzedekah means upholding the image of God of someone to the standard that it should be in, which is shalom, flourishing. This is how we should view people, back to shalom, not the bare minimum. It's very different than charity, which looks to just do a couple things here and there. Shalom and tzedekah, righteousness, means you're not living as an image bearer of God. There's something off here. How can we put you back to your original state? It means to have, like, treat others and have the image of God with God-given dignity that people deserve. Everyone is deserving of God's dignity, the dignity that God has given them because God has created them with that. What does justice mean? Justice comes from the Hebrew word called mishpat. And sometimes mishpat can mean retributive justice, like if you stole something, you should probably go to jail because we need order in society. But more often, the Bible talks about mishpat in a restorative way. So it is rather restorative justice. Once again, how can we go back to the original idea of God, the original image of God? And restorative justice has something specific that neither charity or my good behavior can give me. It means going out of my comfort zone so far that I can reach the vulnerable people and help them get to the ending line. That is the meaning of restorative justice. That is the meaning of mishpat. It is going a step forward, actually seeking the vulnerable. So look at this. It's not a passive thing. Like, oh, I just happened to find someone on the way of my race. No, I saw Dustin suffering there. I cannot let that happen. I need to actively go and seek him because he is in bondage. What am I doing to keep him there? What am I stopping to do that's keeping him there? That is what mishpat or justice means. So in my example of the race, there's three things Kevin could have done. Indifference, charity, or justice. Indifference is saying, yay, I won. What about Dustin? Who's Dustin? Like, I just won the race. I ran really hard, by the way. I worked really hard for running the race. So who's Dustin? I don't know. Maybe he woke up late. He didn't want to run the race. Maybe he didn't train for the race. Maybe he put himself those bondages there and he didn't really want to thrive. I don't know. Maybe he's not smart enough to run. Indifference will say, I don't even know who this dude is. Charity will say, I got $5. Let me give you one penny because I just feel good giving you that, like some of it, and then moving on. Justice is turning back to Dustin, running towards him, not to the finishing line, so you guys can run together to the ending point. Together, because we also want Kevin to win this race, but we also want Dustin to win this race. Charity focuses more on me, and justice focuses on the other. There's an image that I found the other day, and I did not mean to look for this, about charity, what charity really looks like. I don't know if you guys can put it there. Charity focuses more on me, on what I have accomplished and how great I feel about this. How many people do this? I'm not saying social media is bad, trust me. I'm not saying posting stuff is bad, trust me, I'm not saying that. But charity has something specific in the heart. How can I benefit from helping others? Charity is more about me. How can I be the hero in the story? Justice is forgetting for a second about yourself and looking at the other and running towards him because he's the focus, not you. You're not the hero of the story. You're just joining. You're just deciding to join God in the ending goal that will start in Shalom and will end in Shalom. You're not the hero of the story. So charity will be like, I'm just so great, so I'm just gonna prove the world that I've been helping so much. That's what charity does. And it is toxic, and it is dressed as justice, unfortunately. So righteousness and justice are about a radical, selfless way of life, that it is hard. Most of the time, this is not easy. Who wants to leave, almost getting to first place, when they have to go back for the one that is in last place? Who wants to do that in their nature? In our own sinful nature, it doesn't make sense, guys. Unless you love this person so much that you want them to go to the finishing line. It takes sacrifice. The Bible talks about this idea of justice and righteousness all over. Isaiah 1:17 says, learn to do the right. Seek justice. This word seek, by the way, is the same word that comes from mishpat, of like intentionally leaving my place to seek for what is not doing right so I can help rectify it. Seek justice. Defend the oppressed. Take up the cause of the fatherless. Plead the cause of the widow. Take steps to advocate. Mishpat. Proverbs 31:8-9 says, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. Part of my example was to also put something on Dustin's mouth, but I was like, that's a little too much, even for an illustration. But there's so many people that don't even have a voice. because a voice hasn't been given to them. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. Jeremiah 22:3 says, this is what the Lord says. Do what is right, rescue from the hand of the oppressor to the one that he's been robbed. Do not do wrong or violence to the foreigner, the fatherless, or the widow. And do not shed innocent blood in this place. There's so many more examples I could give that I cannot give because of lack of time. But this is all over the Bible. It is in God's very character. The Bible actually mentions the word justice and righteousness 836 times without even thinking just the root, righteousness and justice. Now, if you look for justice, you will have way many more references. What happens when we are not living this way? What happens when we just don't care? We think our race is just individual, and the fact that I'm in first place or last place, it's just up to me. There's an example of that in Psalms 146, 7 and 9. Because of time, I'm not going to read all of that. But this is basically God saying, like, he fights for the cause of the oppressed. He gives food to the hungry. It's talking about all the things that God does to rectify. And at the end, it says this. Verse 9 says, the Lord watches over the foreigner and sustains the fatherless and the widow. But he frustrates the ways of the wicked. Now, that word wicked, who's wicked? In Hebrew, that word wicked means rasha, which means found in the guilt or doing the wrong. Now, we're in our culture, because we try to define what is good and what is bad, we try to define who's rasha, who's guilty. Oh, this person did this, he's rasha. You know, he's guilty. But the biblical meaning of that, it's a person that is ignoring the dignity of people as the image bearers of God. Very different than what we think. Are we being rasha? Are we being found doing the wrong? Are we not upholding people's dignity up to the level of the image of God that they have? God confronted this all over the Bible narrative. You know, actually, Abraham becomes a nation later on, and then they're being oppressed. So God declares Egypt, Russia. They're guilty. They're doing the wrong to the oppressed. So he takes Israelites out, and he teaches them on a way on how to live without doing that. And what happens? They do the exact same thing to others. I want to do a pause there because sadly, history, these are facts, history has shown that when the oppressed gain power, they often wanted to become the oppressor. I'm not speaking this as social justice in Bolivia. I'm not speaking this about how to do social justice in the U.S. I'm talking about biblical social justice. If you are here right now and you're like, I do think I belong to this group because of many factors. Trust me, you don't want to be here. This is not what you want. This is not the result where you want. You know, this has happened to you, and to rectify that, you're calling it justice, and you want to do this now. This is also not justice. There's a word for that, and that is revenge. That is not justice. So whether you're down here or up here, your goal should be this. Our goal as a church, as individuals, and as a congregation, and as a global church should be this. Because that's what the last picture will look like at the end. What does God do about this? He sends a gift to us. Because we are unable to know what is good and wrong. We cannot define tov and ra. We call what is good bad and what is bad good. So he sent his son Jesus so he can die for the unrighteous and he can bring justice to the world. Again, for lack of time, I'm not going to be able to read this, but Jesus came with this goal of rectifying all things to the original way that they were. He had a call of justice because it is in God's very character. He died in behalf of the guilty, even though he was not guilty. He was not Russia, but he died for those who are Russia. And this is how the early church lived. For the early church, it wasn't, being a Christian wasn't just a change of status. I wasn't a Christian, now I'm a Christian, yay. It was more than a status, it was a change of power. Now that I have this power in me, I am compelled to live in a different way, especially looking at those who are here. And you can look at any church history book. That's what Christianity was about. That's what how the title of Christians, that's how we got that title. Because people were like, why are you so crazy fighting for those who don't have voice, fighting for the widow, fighting for the poor, those little Christians? It was more a derogative way to call them. These guys look like Jesus, like Christ. If God declares something righteous when they didn't deserve to be righteous, the next logical thing that this person can do is to go out and seek justice and righteousness for others. If you think God has declared you just and righteous when you didn't deserve to be called just and righteous, the most logical thing you can do as a Christian follower and a believer is to seek justice and righteousness for others. This is a radical way of life. It's not always convenient, and it's not easy. I can guarantee you it's not easy. It's courageously making other people's problems my problems. And this is what Jesus meant when he said, love your neighbor as yourself. So what is equality? Equality is giving everyone the same amount. Equity, which is what the Bible is about, is giving everyone what they need. There's a picture of that, if you guys can go ahead and put it really quick. This is what equity looks like. Actually, no, can you put the other one, the equality one? Yeah, that's what equality looks like. Everyone wants to see the baseball game, so let's give everyone a box so everyone can see it. But you can see that not everyone needs a box to be able to participate in the game. Equity instead does this. He gives two boxes to the one that needs two boxes, and he gives no box to the one that doesn't need any box. Now we call this craziness. We call it insanity because we say, why would you give someone preference? Because they're down here. Again, we don't want them up here. That's not the thing. We don't want this dude in the left to, you know, to have to dig a hole so he can now not see it, because at first the other guy couldn't see it, so now he has to learn not to see it. No, we want everyone to be able to see the game. We want everyone to be able to participate, but we cannot give everyone the same thing because not everyone started at the same starting point. There's this American saying that it says, if you work hard enough and you pull yourself up from your bootstraps, you can make it. But fairness only works when we all are in the same spot to begin with. You cannot act with equality. You cannot do that because not everyone is at the same spot. There's a big group of people that the Bible advocates that they're down here, and the Bible shows very, very often how God is saying, do not mistreat these people. Do not mistreat them. Take care of them. The Old Testament, the reason the prophet spoke so much was two things. Idolatry, you're not worshiping our Lord anymore, so you need to rectify that. And social injustice. You are neglecting the poor. You're neglecting the disadvantaged. You are neglecting the ones that don't have the same ways that you guys have. What does that look like now? There's so many names. These are just some of them. Immigration, criminal justice reform, digital literacy, food security, affordable housing, equal access to healthcare, equal access to basic needs, child labor, gender unequal access to education, racial gaps in education, wage inequality, homelessness. There's just So many guys. These are just some. I'm going to invite the worship team to come up, please. God cares about the Dustins in the world. He cares so much about them that he spends a big amount of time, a huge amount of time in the Bible narrative, talking about how we have to stop oppressing them, either meaning to oppressing them or not meaning to oppressing them. You might be oppressing them. Passively or actively, you are oppressing them. So it says, take special good care of that. God is biased. Yes, God is biased towards this. Is God unfair? Why would he take more, why would he have more time talking about this and not this? Are these not important? Of course they are. And Patty mentioned it this way. In order for God to act with equality, he has to be unequal. He has to bring show special care to this so one day he can be impartial. God has to show impartiality in order that he can act with impartiality. That is the fight of the Christian believer, for us to advocate. I will say it again. The same thing, the logic thing for someone that has been called righteous when they didn't deserve it is to go out and seek righteousness and justice for others as well. You can say, it will never be perfect, Misha. No, it will never be perfect until he comes back. We have the glimpse here. But now that you know how things will end, will you join him in that? Or are you going to ignore what he's doing? He's already doing it. It is your choice if you want to join to something that he has called you to join or to ignore it. Remember the fence cartoon? This is what it would look like in Revelation 21. There's no fence anymore. That's what Revelation 21 would be like if it was a cartoon, in my expectations. No more tears, no more suffering. He will comfort us. There's no need for boxes. There's no fence. This is a radical way of life. It is not always convenient. It is not always easy. It is making other people's problems my problems. It is advocating for the voiceless, defend the plea of the widow, the orphan, the foreigner. And Micah 6:8 says this, and I want to finish with that. This is what he has told us. He has shown you, O mortal, I love the sarcasm in that. You don't define what is good and bad. You're a mortal. He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. What is good? What is tov for God? And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. In other words, church, love your neighbor as yourself.